Hey there, beautiful people. Welcome to Fantie, the podcast for all those complex and complicado conversations around the gray areas in our lives. I reportedly taste like strawberries, Jared Hill.
Yikes, hold on. It's too early in the morning for you to start out with that. I refuse.
I was going to say, I'm trying to act like I'm awake because we're taping this show at 8 o'clock in the morning on a Wednesday rather than 3 o'clock in the afternoon on a Tuesday, Jared Hill. But tasting like strawberries was also accurate, so there's that.
Listen,
Jared Hill.
Don't nobody want to know your flavor profile? Come on.
Maybe somebody.
Well, what? And you know what? How you doing? Say, I'm entertainment journalist, editor, authoress times two. Trayvell Anderson. Y'all, I am so tired. And Jared is already with the shits, okay? I can't, y'all. Okay, coming up on the show today, y'all. We are going to give the fans high treatment to, you know, you love her, you hate her, Miss Twitter. But we will jump into that shortly. But first, for the top of the show, for our Pass the Popcorn, everybody's been talking about their, you know, Spotify Wrapped, you know, or if you are an Apple user like Jared and I, they call it Apple Replay or something like that. We both use Spotify for Spotify exclusive podcasts. So giving you our Spotify Wrapped will not be helpful. But our Apple Replay, we will do. Jared, would you like to start us off with your...
Listen, so I really enjoyed getting to go through all of my replay stuff on Apple because I kind of knew what to expect, but it was kind of affirmative. I, this year, started playing music at night sometimes, which sometimes if it's on loop, you know, it's playing for hours and hours and hours, and it'll play the same couple of things a number of times. And so I was like... This is going to make it real interesting for Renaissance because that's not one of my overnight albums, right? So you want to do top artist, top album, or top song? How do you want
to
start?
I just told you to do top songs. Is you listening?
No.
Jared's not listening, y'all.
It's 8 o'clock in the morning. What are you talking about?
Y'all see what I got to deal with?
My top song is actually not a Beyonce song because I do the overnight.
Why are you assuming that it should be a Beyonce song?
Because it's me.
Interesting.
Listen, I also just realized this was not planned, but I'm wearing my Renaissance t-shirt right now. That was not a part of the plan. But anyway, my top song is a song called A Couscous by Emok. Emok is an artist that I found by using the Shazam on my phone while watching, what was the show that I was in love with earlier? Couples Therapy on Showtime. It was the credit song, and I really, really loved it, and I was like, oh, what is that? And I started playing it, and it actually was a song that was really helpful for me with, like, calming, when I'm anxious or when I'm trying to be creative or whatever it is. It's it's a two-song single. And I really, really love it. And I'll make sure to put the link, to the song on Apple Music or Spotify so people can check it out. But I actually ended up listening to like his whole catalog of music, and he's a black man who I don't know if he's queer or not, but like he has a video that feels kind of queer. Right. I don't know if he's queer fishing us or not. But, like, the music has all been really, really... What'd you say?
I said, not queer fishing.
Isn't that what queer baiting, queer fishing... We did a show on this. To answer your question, my bottom five of my top 10 are... number 6 is D Smoke. Number 7 is Sid. Number 8 is Ari Lennox. That's surprising. Number 9 is... The Deep Sleep Music Academy, which I don't think I've ever searched, but must be playing while I'm asleep. And then I love that number 10 is Lekale 47. Her album, Wash and Set, is my shit. She has a song called Braids to the Flow, which is like my favorite song on the album. But Lekale 47, if you're not familiar, get your life. She's everything.
My top 10 songs are all Beyonce, all from Renaissance. The top song being, of course, Break My Soul, followed by Cozy, co-written by Fanti's own C-O-R.E-C-E, Corice, the Grammy nominated. And so, yeah, my top 10 songs are Beyonce, Renaissance. It is what it is. I have no shame. But my top 5 artists, you know, Beyonce's number 1, obviously. Number 2, this has come as no surprise, is Fantasia. Followed by Lil Nas X, Jasmine Sullivan. And, you know, a surprise entry for me at number 5 in terms of my top 5 list, but also very on brand if you really, really know me, is a 1 Gunica, a.k.a. Monica.
Okay. Okay. I'm never ready whenever someone says Gunica. I'm always like, what? Oh. Like, it's always like a split second of, oh. What? Oh. Like, every time. I the other thing that was interesting to me with my, like, okay, my top album and my top artists are Renaissance and Beyonce, obviously. But like, I was also intrigued by having listened to 91,000 minutes of music this year. Because as I was thinking about it, I was like, oh yeah, you do so many overnights sometimes with like playing music, or if I'm writing or designing or whatever, I will play music on a loop. And so that kind of, you know, makes sense to me, but I did not get a whole rundown of my top 10 songs. I got my top 1, my top artist, and my top album. So I don't know what kind of sorcery you were doing over there, but that's
did you go to the little website? It's a little website, love.
I'm here. I'm on it. But like, I don't see.
If you just scroll down, see, he just had a revelation, y'all, because he don't know how, you know, I guess maybe the user, I won't blame it on you, I'll blame it on the user experience of Apple Rewind.
Oh, no, you go ahead, because you were about to come for me. It's fine. I don't feel safe.
I was, because why? As you started scrolling on your phone, or you clicked something, perhaps, that you didn't click the first time, you see so much information. Y'all, you won't see the video, or maybe you will see the video if we put it up, but he's having this moment of realization come across his face right now. It's like he has, you know this, when they start singing Part of Your World in what's that, the thing with the fish? The mermaid. You know, the feeling that Part of Your World gives you, you know, as she's singing it, that feeling of longing and realization. That's what's going on in Jared's face right now.
What's hilarious is that's not what's happening, because I still have not found all of these other things. Oh, I do see in my replay 2020 playlist, though, Us Again from the Disney Plus short Us Again is also one of my top songs, because I used to wake up every morning to that song. It is a 6-minute short that I believe I talked about on the show earlier this year. But yeah, that is also one of them. And then Show Me Your Love is also from another one. So
I wanted to go over in particular the bottom 5 of the top 10 of your top artists. Because I feel like the top 5, you know, top 5 is usually on brand for most people. I don't know if you can locate this on your replay, since you are, you know,
tip
just
toe
becoming
bitch.
Part of our world right now.
Toe bitch.
But the bottom 6 of my top 10 artists, which I thought was interesting, is at number 6 is Lizzo. At number 7, the lone white man. On my list, surprise, surprise, is Nicholas Britell, and that's because of the If Beale Street Could Talk
score. I was gonna say, that's because he did some black shit.
I play that when I write. And then we have number 8, Rihanna. Number 9, the second white person on my list, although we have adopted her in the race war from the late 80s, 90s, if I'm not mistaken, a 1 Tina Marie.
Because you play the fuck out of Square Biz.
I sure did. My song, that's the song that I thought would be at the top of my list, if I'm being honest.
Baby,
okay?
You love
she
you a
loves
Square
a Square Biz. Absolutely, does. Baby. Baby, come on. I need somebody to do a mix with like Square Biz and Cuff It, okay? Because those are, that's my energy, okay?
Now, I will say the mix that I've been requesting this year from Renaissance has been, I want Beyonce's Move and Ludacris's Stand Up.
Oh, not Ludacris's Move? Oh, is that song? Oh, okay, I thought it was called Move, Bitch, Get Out the Way. I did not know it was called Stand Up. But that makes sense.
I was calling it Move Bitch Get Out the Way until I typed it into Apple and it was like, I don't know what that is, but here's Stand Up. Those are the remixes that I would love. Okay, we're going to take a quick break when we get back.
Last thing. Sorry. My number 10 I didn't say is Mary J. Blige. Shout out to the queen of, what is it, hip hop soul? What does she call herself? Something like that.
I just always think about her.
The queen of boots.
With knee-high boots and lightsabers.
Period. Not lightsabers.
A break. When we come back, we are going to get into the complex and the complicado of Twitter. We're going to be right back.
Hey, beautiful people. It is the season of being around your family.
Woo! Let me stop. Hold on.
Listen.
Because as soon as you said the season, I was like, oh, I know where this is going.
Listen, it is the season of being around your family. And, you know, not all of us have, you know, the 100% positive, wonderful relationships with everybody in our family. You got that one cousin, that one uncle, that one auntie, or maybe it's your mammy and your pappy, right? Who just really gets on your nerves, okay? Well, I want to suggest something that might help you make it through both the season of being around family, as well as some of this, you know, seasonal depression that many of us might be feeling and going through. And that's where microdosing comes into play. You've probably heard about microdosing, and if not, just know that all sorts of people are microdosing daily to feel better, to feel healthier and perform better. Our show today is sponsored by Microdose Gummies. Microdose Gummies deliver perfect entry-level doses of THC that help you feel just the right amount of good. That way, at minimum, you won't have to flip over the table.
Microdose is available nationwide. To learn more about microdosing THC, go to microdose.com and use code FANTI to get free shipping and 30% off your first order. Links can be found in the show description. But again, that's microdose.com, code FANTI. Welcome back to Fanti. It's only been about a month and a half since the weather in the room changed, and a white South African spent $44 billion to buy something that just could not have been worth that much money. Elon Musk's purchase of Twitter has been a possibility brewing throughout 2022, and the nightmare became a reality on October 22nd. According to the New York Times, before Musk bought Twitter, quote, slurs against Black Americans showed up on the social media service an average of about 1,300 times a day. After the billionaire became Twitter's owner, they jumped to almost 4,000 times a day. Slurs against gay men appeared on Twitter 2,500 times a day on average before Musk took over, and afterward, about 4,000 times a day. And Kanye, notwithstanding, the Times reports that anti-Semitic posts referring to Jews and Judaism soared more than 61% in the 2 weeks after Musk bought Twitter. The list of offenses is lengthy. Requiring payment for verification was the one that pissed me off first. But unsuspending Donald Trump, along with a host of others, including groups known for terrorism, firing the majority of employees and executives while making demands of those that opted to stay, Musk recently ended a policy against COVID mis and disinformation. The list of things that he has done goes on and on and on. There are a lot of different ways to think and feel about the changes at Twitter and what is to come. So we'll take our complex and complicado format for this discussion. As we begin, Travel, I'm kind of wondering where you are. How are you feeling about staying on Twitter or not? How are you thinking about that?
To be quite honest, I'm not thinking about it. I think that Twitter has, the latest developments about Twitter being even more of a shit show, it hasn't changed my thoughts. Twitter, I think my relationship to social media writ large, is already one in which I use the platform what I needed to use it for, right? And do away with the rest. And I feel like that's where I am with it now. I'm not leaving. I have not gotten a Mastodon account. I did do the, we were tagged in a tweet about, I think maybe you, Jared, or somebody had asked about an alternative to, like, where Black folks are going after Twitter. And somebody tagged us in a tweet about about Black Twitter, about a site called Black, isn't it called Black Twitter? Yeah. That was created by this Black woman. So like I got a little, you know, account, like, you know, a little holds account over there.
Same.
But I'm like, I'm really like, for me, the conversation around Twitter has been an interesting one because I find that, how do I want to say this? I feel like, it's already been bad. It's already been a shit show, right? And so, like, has it gotten worse? Sure. You know, the numbers say it's gotten worse, but, like, it was already bad? I don't know if I'm making any sense.
Well, the thing is, Twitter doesn't feel different for me as a user, right? I do know that I've seen my numbers changing, like my Twitter numbers have been going down. And after a while, I was Googling, like, why is this happening? And it said that a lot of liberal or progressive voices online are seeing their numbers change because people are leaving Twitter and things like that. And I was like, well, that's interesting. But like, I don't know that that's the reason. I also have a really weird relationship with Twitter followers because I had so many people follow me after the Melania Trump, Michelle Obama plagiarism speech moment. And so like a lot of people followed me then, and like that is not necessarily an organic kind of way to meet a person or to like, oh, I listen to their show or I do whatever. So like I have a good section of my audience that comes from that as well. But like my Twitter experience has been complicated, right? As we kind of get into like the complex and complicado of it, for me, like I am thinking about whether or not I'm gonna stay or go. I'm not like ready to leave yet, but I also am kind of like mentally prepared for something to happen at any given moment and to be like, you know what, it's time to go. And so I don't know when that moment is or what that thing is, but I, as much as you keep hearing things every other day, and I'm not even really like watching news so much or following the news alerts about it, but like, you know, the things kind of seep into the culture and into the conversation and into the group chat. And so I'm kind of thinking about it that way.
Well, one thing I also want to note, you know, in this conversation, and I guess I have already said this, but I think our own individual relationships to social media are also like, we need to detail those, right? Because, and I say that because there are some people whose jobs it is, right, to be on social media, to use these platforms in the ways that they do, or their livelihoods, right, are super connected to, you know, and we could talk specifically about Twitter in this instance, in ways that my livelihood, while it has been improved because of Twitter, right? Like I have had editors DM me. I literally just did, you know, a cover story for a publication that comes out next month, and the editor DM'd me, right? That was the first, you know, point of contact, right? So like Twitter is useful in those particular ways, but like I'm wondering for you, like you go in and out of being on social media altogether, right? Like you navigate and you have set various boundaries already in your general usage of social media, which I think, you know, right, complicates this conversation around whether or not we're going to stay on Twitter or not because of the ways that you, like, I don't know if you're on a break of social media right now, but like You take breaks from social media, right? Like you will not go on social media for whatever reasons that you don't go on social media, which is very different, right, than the folks who, you know, quote unquote can't, for whatever reasons they feel like they can't, you know, take those breaks. And so I wonder, I'm thinking about how much this conversation and even the considerations of leaving Twitter are different for, you know, those of us who can or are or are able or whatever the right language is to make that separation. But for so many people, right, in so many communities, they can't, or at least it's not as I don't want to say simple, but go ahead.
Well, I don't. A couple of things. Number one, I do take breaks from social media. Right now, I'm taking a break from scrolling on social media. Like, I might come in and post things or, like, respond to messages or respond to mentions or check my messages. But, like, I spend too much time scrolling the timeline, right? And, like, I will get on Instagram or Twitter and, like, scroll and scroll and respond and like and blah, blah, blah and whatever for way too much time. And so I'm taking a break from like scrolling, but I am still like posting because I feel like you're supposed to stay engaged. I don't feel like I can just up and leave social media and be fine. Because it is a part of work, right? And like, that's also a part of why I take breaks in the way that I do, but I don't even feel like I do well at taking breaks. Like, I have a really difficult time like being removed from it, which also makes me concerned, like, am I hooked on this shit? Like, you know what I mean? Like, is this a problem? Right now I'm on a bit of a break because it's a part of a fast that I'm doing with like trying to take some things out of my life for a little while, for a few weeks. And like, I just felt like I was way too engaged with social media. And so it's been challenging in that way.
That's my point though, right? Like, the because of how, quote unquote, I'm going to use this word for this moment, addicted so many people are, right? Or how much time so many people spend on social media. I think for you all, because I'm not one of those people, for you all, the conversation of leaving in particular is different, right? Because it because of how much space, time, etc. Right? But for me, I don't know if this is a byproduct of just, you know, the type of ways that I kind of just move through the world, but like, I have never been that person who, you know, feels like social media takes up too much of their life. I've also, because of the visibility that I've had over, you know, the period that I've had visibility, the way that I approach engagement on these platforms, I think is different. Like I'll post things, right? But I'm not necessarily interested in conversation. Like, if it happens, right, and somebody responds and like there's something that needs to be, you know, responded to, I will. But I don't know how to articulate it. It's not as front of a mind of a concern. And so when it comes to this conversation about like the social media platform as it is now, I'm just like, it feels like a whole lot of chickens running around with their heads cut off is what it feels like this moment is to me. And I guess that's also what it is, right?
Well, so even to that point, like part of this year, like taking breaks, because I've taken breaks for the last few years, but like this year, this year and last year, depression has been a big part of that. Because like when I'm, one of the ways that I've been able to tell like, oh, something is up with me, is when I get on social media, if I feel overwhelmed by social media, like getting on Twitter, I've described this on the show before, sometimes getting on Twitter feels like the way we depict anxiety on screen. And I mean that when we are showing like a character is feeling anxious, we will show one voice on the left and another voice on the right and another voice above them and another voice behind them and another. And it's like, and then they're all like speaking at the same time. Twitter feels like that to me sometimes. And it's not all the time, but like I can definitely tell when I'm feeling extremely depressed or just really anxious that it's overwhelming for me. Instagram doesn't feel as much that way, I think, because you don't see as many people on screen at one time. On Twitter, you can see 5-6 tweets on the screen at one time. But like that is something that has made me want to take breaks away from it. As we kind of look at how Twitter has like impacted our work and our lives, I can't deny like Twitter changed my life, right? I tweeted one thing and, well, one night it was a string of tweets, but there was one tweet that really changed my life, right? So like the tweet about Melania plagiarizing Michelle Obama in 2016 really kind of changed the trajectory that I was on, and made me someone that people at the very least knew my work because of that. And to this day, people still talk to me about it. And you know, it's a part of history. It's in textbooks and my face is in a textbook because of it. And my name is in plenty of people's, you know, political memoirs and all those kinds of things because of what happened that year. And so I can't deny that Twitter has had like a massive impact on my career and my life. But I also kind of hate it, right? Which is why I have to take breaks from it, because it can be very consuming, or just it can have more time in my life than I want it to have.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's interesting to hear, because I would similarly say that Twitter has been a tool, a positive tool in my career in terms of building an audience, in terms of building a quote-unquote brand, as the kids say. But unlike you, I don't have a defining moment with Twitter, right? Like, I don't have that, like, I want to say aha moment, but that's not how Oprah uses it.
It's not. It's not.
but you know that moment on Twitter where, you know, that you know, like you, the Melania tweet, or I always remember Clarkeisha Kent's Groupon peen tweet that like became a big thing, or what's the young lady's name from who did the Zola, who did the tweet thread that became the movie Zola, Azara, some would have ate. Anyway, I don't have one of those moments, but Twitter has factored into, you know, my career in really interesting ways. And as that journey has happened, there have been the trolls already, right? There has been the transphobia and the racism and the anti-blackness and, you know, all this other stuff. And so I often wonder if that particular trajectory is why I'm a little, you know, at this point, I guess, desensitized. Maybe that's the proper language to the uncertainty and the havoc, right, that seems to have been Elon Musk buying Twitter and doing all of this foolishness.
Yeah, Twitter has been the place that I have gotten the most, like, weird, you know, anti-black, white supremacist shit. Twitter tends to be the place that I've had, like, I won't say death threats, but I've had, like, people telling me to kill myself, or you should be dead, like, that type of shit. I've not had people coming at me saying, I'm gonna kill you. But, like, it's been a very weird, kind of fucked up place to, like, sometimes get messages, right, from people that I don't know. Instagram, I feel like, is different in that, like, the messages that I don't want are always, like, some kind of advertising or branding or, you know, do you want to grow your followers or that type of annoying stuff. But Twitter has been a uniquely challenging place. I've also been on Twitter since September of 2008, right? I've been on Twitter for about 14 years now. And so, like, it is such a second, you know, nature to be on Twitter or to, like, check Twitter or to tweet something. I'm often concerned about how often I have a thought and think, like, oh, I should tweet that. And, like, I'm like, oh, that's, like, such a thing of this generation. Like, my parents don't have a thought and then think, like, oh, that would be a great tweet, right? Like, my parents aren't even on Twitter. And so, like, I think that is a unique thing about our generation. But I'm also concerned about the fact that, you know, there's 14 years of tweets. Now, mind you, I have always been on Twitter with the intention and expectation of what I'm doing now. So, like, you ain't gonna find dick pics on Twitter. You ain't gonna find me, like, you know, doing certain things on Twitter or saying certain things. So I'm not, like, worried about, like, oh, shit, hopefully these tweets don't come back. And I'm sure I've said something that I'd be like, eh, I probably wouldn't have said that again. But I don't have, like, a bunch of things on Twitter where I'm, like, really nervous about or, like, going back to delete shit and stuff like that. But Twitter has been a part of my life for so long. I remember the day I got on Twitter. I was at a friend's house who is one of my nerd friends. And he was like, oh, you should get on Twitter. This is going to be a big thing. And I was like, on what? Like, what are you talking about? And he was like, oh, it's like microblogging. And I had a blog at the time, right? Which I just recently found again. And so it's been kind of interesting to think back on how I started on Twitter, because back then it was before famous people were on Twitter. It's before, you know, Wendy's was, you know, tweeting weird shit at people that was funny. It was before brands and news stations had Twitter accounts, before that was a source for us to get news. It was just like people on Twitter that were, you know, able to get an account and get on there and say things. And now Twitter has become, you know, a thing where the president of the United States is on Twitter and presidents have now been on Twitter, right? We think about Barack Obama. They called him the social media president when he was first elected because he was on social media and that was so different. And that was a way for him to connect with young people. And then we had Donald Trump, who used Twitter in ways that no one ever anticipated, right? As a place for inciting violence, as a place for, you know, really kind of creating policy and, you know, directing how his administration was going to work. So Twitter has become something so different than it was when it began. But that's also all of these social media platforms. I think Facebook and Twitter are probably the best demonstrations of that. I feel like Instagram, you know, has become a thing with influencers and brands and ads and all that kind of stuff. But like Twitter, I mean, one of the problems that it's had is that they've not been able to be profitable. Right. And like it's always been a challenge for them to figure out how to stay afloat is from like how it seems like it's been talked about over the years.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like I think for me, in this conversation, I always think about particularly when folks talk about like how much the platform has changed over the years. I don't remember when I joined, but I was in college at least. And you're right. That was, you know, it seemed a lot more, for me at least, small community. Like I joined Twitter while I was at Morehouse. And I joined Twitter while I was at Morehouse because so much community building and discourse was happening on Twitter, right? We were live tweeting. You're familiar with the HBCU world, obviously. So, you know, there's pageants every other week. There is, you know, the rumors about who's pledging which line, rushing which, you know, whatever they call it. All that other stuff, right? And so like Twitter was one of those particular spaces. Now, you know,
for you in April 2010.
I'm sorry?
April 2010 is when you
joined. Oh, you looked it up. Great. April 2010. So that's the fall of the spring of my freshman year. That's pageant season. That's, you know, in the AUC in particular, et cetera. But you know, I always wonder about like what our role as users have been in the shifts that is Twitter. And because yes, you know, the brands are there now and they're populating their tweets with, you know, black slang, and you know, everybody's trying to sell something. Everybody's trying to build something. You know, everybody's trying to fundraise for something. And I wonder about how kind of these broader offline circumstances that we've all been living through have also kind of, you know, seeped into our experiences with Twitter, both in terms of us being, you know, some of us being like, you know, over-reliant, quote, maybe is a word, or addicted, or social media taking up a lot of space. I think about, you know, Black Lives Matter. Let me phrase this appropriately, how Twitter was a useful tool in the building of what we now know to be the Black Lives Matter movement, formally and informally, right? I think of Oscar So White, April Rain, and that hashtag, right? And the ways that we've been able to use this platform, right, for quote unquote good. And like that is something that I won't be forgetting transitions.
I mean, to your point, like Black Lives Matter would not be a thing in the way that it is without Twitter, right? Black Lives Matter started as a hashtag. And I say that confidently because like the platform has mattered. If I use the Melania tweet, for instance, as an example, I posted that same exact thing on Facebook at the same exact time. I think right now it has 25 shares, right? Like it wasn't like a thing on Facebook. And like it even became a thing, right? It became an international news story, and that post still, like, nobody really, really shared it. But I think what's interesting to me about what social media has illuminated is, like, we always talk about these different platforms, and I hear a lot of discussion around, like, oh, Facebook is just terrible because you know, they, because of the things that I see on it. And I think part of that is true, right? But, like, I think the truth of the matter is, like, people can be terrible, right? And people can also be awesome, right? Like, these are user-generated user-generated websites, right? Or things where people are putting things on them and people see them. I think the thing that makes them a little bit more complicated is when you start bringing in algorithms and changing up what people see and how they engage things. The first time that I really felt that was when Instagram I think I pronounced that the way that you tend to. Instagram. Like, I don't know why
you... Wow, hold on. How I get in it?
You're on the show. Did you realize we're having a conversation? I don't know. But, like, Instagram changed their algorithm from being chronological, like, oh, I just saw what happened from... because this person just posted this, to being more whatever the algorithm says it's going to be today, right? That is always changing. And so that is when it started to feel like, no, these platforms are manipulating what's happening here, right? And Facebook is a great place to be able to see that when we look at Facebook and Twitter, when we see the rise of, like, hate groups online, because they kind of create this feedback loop where... if you believe in conspiracy theories, it's going to bring you more conspiracy theories and more conspiracy theories. At first, it's QAnon. Then it's, you know, whatever the next thing is.
Umar Johnson.
I mean, right? And, like, but I also want to say, like, these things have also been able to do a lot of good. We see a lot of great things that are happening on social media, or a lot of great things that come from social media. People being able to create causes, as you talked about, Black Lives Matter, and, you know, great discussions around Oscar So White and how those things have been able to impact culture. And there's myriad other ones that we could, you know, we could spend weeks, months, years talking about all of them. So I'm intrigued by that dynamic as well, because there's a lot of conversation around how these platforms are inherently good or bad. But I think that that is also a reflection of people.
Yeah, I think, you know, as we wrap, I feel like there is, like, we all have to make we'll make our own decisions about, like, what we do with Twitter specifically, right? But what I will say is that, like, Twitter is what it is, and many of these platforms are what they are because of the people on them. And what I mean by that, I'm not talking about, you know, these platforms are what they are as hell holes. I mean, they are what they are in terms of, like, they take up as much space as they do in our lives because of how we have been able to use these platforms in the various ways that we've been able to use these platforms. And because of that, what we have done as a community, and I'm talking specifically to Black folks, folks of color, queer people, trans people, etc., what we have been able to do with Twitter can be done elsewhere. I will say, for me, y'all just let me know where that's going to be, and I'll circle around later.
I want to stay there for 1 second, because in our book, Historically Black Phrases, which is going to be available for pre-order very soon, allegedly, we have a conversation with a linguist named Dr. Ann Charity Hudley, and she talks about how Twitter has been an interesting place for our language to exist, right? And to be able to have some kind of record. And so to be able to see the ways that different people write words, we've talked ad nauseum, really, at this point, about how, you know, how do we spell that, right? Or how do we write that? Because it really feels more like a sound, or mm-hmm, or uh-uh, or those kinds of different things, right? But, like, seeing people write them out on Twitter has really been able to kind of move language forward in a way for a lot of different, you know, marginalized or intentionally exploited communities to be able to have, like, their language written and recorded, and then also, like, shared and begin to, you know, kind of spread throughout the world, really. And so I think that's an important piece of this. That is not Twitter specific, but Twitter is unique in the different ways that we engage it. So I think that there's, you know, real value in the ways that we've been able to engage Twitter. But again, like, it can also be really harmful as well. We want
to
know.
But I just need, let me just say, I need y'all to get on one accord, okay? Tell me the one place we going.
I will say, I set up a Black Twitter account, a holding account, as you said. Haven't been back on the website since the day I made that account.
Me either.
I believe, yeah, I set up a Mastodon.
Hive is another one that they're talking about right now.
I don't know her. What is that?
I don't know. Post is another one. Like this, y'all. Y'all gotta calm it down.
Beehive is about all the buzzing that I've got. But I set up something on Mastodon. I didn't like how Mastodon made me have to join a group and it's at this, at that. And I was like, yeah, this is feel stupid. I know there's like a Tumblr reboot, new Tumble. There's like all kinds of different shit. We'll see what it is. But very much like Travell has said, let me know what the one is and I'll go there. Maybe.
Maybe, right.
Major asterisk next to that because we gonna see, girl. We want to know what y'all think. Hit us up on social media, on Twitter or on the Instagram, at Fantide Podcast. Let us know what you think. We want to hear what you think Travell got wrong. We're going to take a break when we come back.
Wow.
Why y'all hate us so much and listener feedback and these dishonorable mentions. Don't go anywhere.
Hello, I'm a stuffy dowager countess.
Travis?
I'm judging everybody's manners.
Oh, no.
Schmanners isn't judgy. It's about teaching you to be your best self and be a little more confident when you enter social situations that you don't understand, and maybe also teach you a little bit about history you didn't know or give you interesting things to talk about at parties.
Yeah, like the secret life of Emily Post.
Or like why wristwatches are the way that they are.
We can talk about table manners from the Victorian era.
Sure, or what it's like to attend a Regency ball.
Yeah.
You can find all that and more if you listen to Schmanners on Maximum Fun or wherever your podcasts come from, I guess.
Manners, Schmanners. Get it?
You probably already have a favorite animal. Maybe it's a powerful apex predator like the tiger or a cute and cuddly panda. And those are great, but have you considered something a little more unconventional?
Could I perhaps interest you in the Greenland shark, which can live for nearly 400 years? Or maybe the jewel wasp, who performs brain surgery on cockroaches to control their minds?
On Just the Zoo of Us, we review animals by giving them ratings out of 10 in the categories of effectiveness, ingenuity, and aesthetics. Listen with friends and family of all ages to find your new favorite animal with Just the Zoo of Us on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get podcasts.
Welcome back, beautiful people. We're going to get into our listener feedback segment, your opportunity to tell us what you think. We've got a DM here. This is a learning lesson DM for you, Jared, specifically, but also for the rest of us. This comes from a listener in South Africa. You know who you are. Shout out to you. And it's in response to the a piece of conversation that we had on our What Was Said episode last week when we were talking about the conversation around, you know, I believe I said something to the effect of there have been three or four people in the last few weeks who in not, you know, not in uncertain terms, y'all know what I mean, have said that I am probably, you know, neurodivergent. And I'll jump into the DM right now. That's the context for y'all, in case you didn't listen to last week's episode, which you should go do. All right. Says, hi, Fantai Podcast. Love your podcast. Really insightful and my comfort food. Was listening to your recent What Was Said episode and Jared remarked, quote, we're all on the spectrum. And I hope Jared doesn't take this the wrong way, but I fear that's a little ableist and here's why. I myself am on the autism spectrum. And one of the many misconceptions, microaggressions we experience is being told, quote, everyone is a little bit autistic, which could not be further from the truth. Those on the spectrum and those who have ADHD are considered neurodivergent, and the broader world is referred to neurotypical. To be neurotypical is to function in a way that a conventionally typical brain would. As much as it would be nice to believe we are all on the spectrum, the reality is we live in a world that caters to neurotypical brains as the default, and neurodivergent people are discriminated and marginalized and forced to mask their neurodivergence to survive in the neurotypical world. Love this show, and I hope you continue to do great work and learn from this. Please keep, oh, that's what they said, keep their name bleeped, which I already did. Love you. Also, to add to my point, neurodivergence does not solely include include autism. Neurodivergence include, this person says ADHD, OCD, and bipolar disorder, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know about that. Google it yourself to verify. Once again, please do not take this as an attack, but a teachable moment to do better.
One, I do take it the wrong way. No. So I think this is important. And like we often have had moments where people will correct us and say, hey, that was ableist or that was fatphobic or that was whatever. And so this, I hear you. I think what's challenging about this is like my understanding of autism is that autism is not a specific thing that happens, right? Autism is a collection of different things that kind of fall under an umbrella diagnosis of autism, and they can be various different things, and it doesn't show up the same way for every person, right? Autism can be a collection of things for one person and a completely different collection of experiences for another. And so I know that it looks a lot of different ways for everyone, and so I definitely respect and appreciate that. I also am a person who has been diagnosed ADHD for years and years and years. And I've not thought of it as neurodivergence, but as I'm Googling it and looking it up, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder is a part of, you know, the neurodivergent umbrella of terms, if you will. So I received that. And I the reason I say that, you know, there's a common phrase about people, you know, everyone being a little bit on the spectrum, I think is probably because of that. Because of that umbrella, that is not a specific thing, as we would say, like, oh, you have a broken arm. That's a very specific diagnosis. We can look at that one thing and see that this thing happened and this is what that is. Whereas with neurodivergence, there is a whole slew of different things that can be included in there. So I hear you that the everyone is on the spectrum thing, you know, kind of loops everyone together. That makes sense. I get that.
Absolutely. Thank you for that, listener from South Africa. We see each other. And then we got an email from Candace. It's a very short email. I just, you know, thought it was a nice funny. Shout out to Candace in Atlanta. And Candace says, the only exception to this was the subject line of the email. The only exception to segregation now, segregation forever, ... And then the body of the email was Travel's Thanksgiving place.
First of all, you and like the refrain of segregation now, segregation forever. We should put in context for some people so we know what we're talking about. But Travel believes in segregation. Travel does not believe in the mixing of the races.
That is not what I said.
That is not what it is. That is not what that is. To be clear,
we're not gonna do this. But this is a joke. I have to make it a disclaimer and say it's a joke before I say it. And hopefully, no one ever, you know, edits this.
Taking this out of context immediately. Swish! I need the clip when we get off the air.
Somebody is gonna do a super cut. Of
I'll see. Y'all can't see it, but Swish is really leaned into the camera right now. Like, what's this about to be? Send me your audio when we're done.
Somebody named Laura Swisher is going to do a supercut of every, you know, ironic, slightly problematic thing that I have said out of proper context. But you're right. But you're right, Candace. I do believe in integration on my plate. Love that for me.
Listen, completely here for it, okay? I want all the things touching.
I don't know if y'all can hear that motorcycle in the background that just zoomed past my window. But if you can, and it's in the recording, love that for you. I just wanted to acknowledge it just in case.
Noted. Thank you for that. I believe in the integration of the meal. So it's now time for our dishonorable mentions. These are the stories or people that caught our attention this week that deserve a call out either for their good or for their stupid. Travel, you want to get started?
Sure. I just have a few mentions. I want to give a shout out to, I believe I gave a shout out to this podcast before. It's called Making. It's a podcast from Chicago's WBEZ.
So good!
The first couple seasons were focused on individuals. Like, the entire season was focused on an individual. One of which was Oprah.
Season one was Oprah. It was so good.
Yeah, I believe that's the recommendation that I had made when we first mentioned it on the show. But I'm mentioning it again because this current season of that podcast, each episode is focused on a different individual. And they do these group interviews with, you know, relevant people who can speak to these individuals' lives. They had a recent episode on RuPaul that was interesting. They had one on Jesse Jackson that was interesting. One on Serena Williams, also interesting. So, and it's hosted, this season of the show is hosted by Brandon Pope, who is a, you know, member of the NABJ family. He is the president of the Chicago chapter of NABJ. And so it's a really good podcast. Love the storytelling they're doing there. So shout out to him and the team there. I'm going to give a...
Can I just say, season one is making Oprah. Season two is making Obama, very Chicago, as we're looking at, like, what comes out of that show. Season three is about making Beyonce, and every episode of these shows is kind of, like, looking into how they became who they became. And then season four, as Travolta was saying, is more diverse and, like, talking about different folks. So it's an amazing show. If you're an Oprah fan, if you're an Obama fan, if you're a Beyonce fan, go listen. It's just such an in-depth show. I loved that show, and I haven't listened to the Beyonce season. I need to go check that out.
Oh, I was gonna say, no shade to the team. The Oprah season is the best, followed by, I would say, the Obama season, and this current season, I would say, are tied. And I would say the Beyonce one is out of them. I would say that is the lower one. But really great storytelling that they're doing there. The interviews that they get, so good. Also, shout out to my fave. I've already mentioned her on the show, Fantasia. She recently was inducted. I don't know how you use this language as it relates to the Greek letter organizations, but she was recently made a member, an honorary member, I assume, of Sigma Gamma. Is it Sigma Gamma Rho? Yes, SG Rho. Sigma Gamma Rho, sorority, Incorporated, the Poodles, I believe they're the Poodles. And I do have a comment about this that I am not going to say on recorded.
Thanks for bringing it up.
But if you are familiar with the Divine Nine, you know where I'm going with this. But shout out to Fantasia. She's been performing and, like, throwing up the little, you know, the little hand symbol.
She's in. Is she honorary?
I think it's honorary. You know, I think most celebrities are honorary, but, like, you know,
if it happens during their fame.
Because
I know, like,
they do the ceremonies and all of that.
First of all, my favorite SG Rho is my, we have been friends since seventh grade, Nicole. She's been on the show, Dr. Liggins, my fave SG Rho. Fantasia can be number three. I don't know who number two is, but I'm sure there's another one.
Wow.
Just kidding.
That's fine.
That was really just a jab at you. That was not necessary.
Listen, it's okay. It's okay. I am a fan of Me Fi Me. Shout out to all my line siblings from Me Fi Me.
It wouldn't be anything.
We create new language to you know, as one does.
Ow.
To meet our needs. Okay, my last honorable mention has to go to the one and only Keke Palmer. She hosted SNL this past weekend. She's wonderful. She's fabulous. She's amazing. She's in this moment in her career. She launched her Key TV situation. They're doing all of the For Your Consideration like promo stuff from her role in Nope earlier this year. There was a video that was released. I believe that's Vanity Fair or Variety. I believe it's Vanity Fair between Keke and Angela Bassett reuniting, quote unquote, after a number of years. Angela Bassett played her mother in Keela and the Bee. And so I just got to shout out Keke Palmer. Oh, also, she announced that she's pregnant on SNL as well. We love to see it. And I love that for her. Just wanted to shout her out.
I should say, like, I feel like we have to get Keke Palmer on the show. Like, Kiki is one of my favorite things right now. Anything that Kiki is doing, I'm at least going to check it out. Like, I have not watched all of Password on NBC, but, like, I will pop in because I want to see Kiki. Like, I just thoroughly enjoy her. I want to give a couple of shout-outs. Number one, I just watched Dion Cole's special over on Netflix. The special is really funny, but I want to give a dishonorable mention to closed captioning. This is something I've talked about on the show a long time ago, but closed captioning is one of the places where you can easily see how diversity, equity, and inclusion is not always happening, because I found it interesting. I watched Trevor Noah's special, and then I watched Dion Cole's special back to back, right? And I always have closed captioning on, or the subtitles, or whatever you want to call it. And like, Trevor Noah is speaking in multiple languages. He is using slang language, and it is pretty spot on. Dion Cole, on the other hand, not the case. And I started like recording like moments with my phone to the TV to like where it was just completely wrong. And like, it really, really frustrates me. And I don't have the bandwidth to take this up as a cause, but like, whoever is out there working on closed captioning, I would love to hear from you. You can hit me up on Twitter, send me a DM, whatever is required. I'll read it. You love to say that. I read my DMs. I just be annoyed by them oftentimes. But hit me up on Twitter. Let me know what it is, because that has been really, really frustrating. I also want to give an honorable mention to the Just Like Me box. Every week we're talking to y'all about different things that are businesses that we'd love for you to support over the holidays. The Just Like Me box is a thing that I got from my nephew, where every month he gets a delivery of books or children's books that are that feature diverse characters. And so there he is able to like see black and brown characters that he can relate to in a different kind of way than, you know, the typical children's books. Children's books that have been, you know, pretty popular over the years and things like that. So I've been enjoying it. Every month he gets a different box of books, and I'm excited about that. Lastly, I'm going to give a shout out to all the folks over at Ultimed. First things first, they paid me to host something over the weekend. They paid me to host something yesterday, which is the reason that we are taping this show on Wednesday. But I just met so many fantastic.
Okay, so if they paid you, where my check at, since you mentioned them on the show? Sound like they need to pay us too.
You done? They did not pay for an advertisement. That's the gag. But all of the people that I met yesterday on Tuesday at their all hands, I just had such a fantastic day. And all the people here at Ultimed is a Los Angeles-based medical group. And I'm just really, really grateful for all the love and appreciation. I have so much appreciation for all the folks that I met over there yesterday who are great, doing great work over in medicine, and excited about that. It is now time for... Oh, wait, hold on. We have one more honorable mention, and it goes to us. Shout out to all of us here and Jasmine Simpkins, who's actually going to be on the show coming up soon. We did an episode called The Blogger Journalist Divide featuring Jasmine Simpkins, which was, quote, a thoughtful analysis of the fine line between journalists and bloggers and the importance of protecting the standards of journalism. And we won a National Arts and Entertainment Journalism Award on Sunday for that episode. I always hate the way that we reference hard news and soft news, because I don't like it. But we won a soft news feature. We got first place for that. So shout out to you, Travel, to me, Laura Swisher, and the whole team that makes Fanti happen. So congratulations to all of us on that. Now it's time for...
Black history is happening every day. Y'all know what it is. We are recording on Wednesday. You know what yesterday was. You know what it is. So we're going to give the shout out this week to one Raphael Warnock.
I was up late last night after getting in from hosting the All Hands with Ultimed and like glued to the TV watching these results come in. Shout out to Raphael Warnock. Also shout out to Michael Brewer, my bestie, a Morehouse icon, one of your sisters, who is the communications director.
He is a Morehouse icon.
He is.
You are absolutely right.
Yeah.
Michael Brewer deserves His fucking flower. You are absolutely fucking correct. Absolutely.
Yes. Michael Brewer, who's the communications director over in the DC office, has been my bestie since the day we met. We met and like were instantly clicked. And so I've had a special affinity for Raphael Warnock, but congratulations to winning the Senate seat over Herschel Walker, who is probably back in his Texas home this morning, where he actually lives. I tweeted last night, once again, a black man has saved America from itself. And someone replied, once again, black women's organizing has saved America from itself. And that was absolutely right as well. So shout out to all the folks in Georgia who came out. It was a close race, which is a whole other conversation. But shout out to all of the folks in Georgia and to the Senate. I just want to say on MSNBC, they always do like the 50-50 split of the seats in the Senate. And like there's like that one seat that's on the left-hand side of the right. Y'all bet not give Raphael Warnock that seat sitting over with the Republicans, motherfuckers. After he has been through 4 elections in 2 years and has saved this situation now twice, he better get a good seat.
I'm sure it will go to Kristen Sinema because she's been doing the conservatives' work.
Listen,
you know, for them.
Whatever it takes, he better get a good damn seat. God damn it. All that said, congratulations to Raphael Warnock. Before we go, if this conversation has piqued your interest and you just want a little bit more, just a wee bit more of this here.
Good.
Go ahead on and check out other episodes that have related conversations. We actually have various different conversations on the ways that social media has impacted our work and our catalog. So go check those out. We ask that if you are listening on Apple Podcasts or any of the platforms that allow you to review and rate the show, why you love it so much, why I'm your favorite, or why Travelle, I don't know why Travelle would be your fave, but why you love the show, or why you hate the show. Or
I don't even have the energy to play with you no more.
Why? We have someone at Minty Pants on Apple. First of all, I don't know what Minty Pants means, but this one says, Jared and Travelle are so smart and funny. These conversations are fantastic. Great guests, and I also love when it's just the two incredibly talented hosts. Shout out to Minty Pants. I think that's probably the best name that I've seen in a review all along. If you have a comment or suggestion about this week's show, we're at Fanti Podcast on Instagram and Twitter. You can use the hashtag FantiFam to join the conversation, or you can shoot us an email to fanti@maximumfun.org.
It is the season of giving, and if you want to give us some of your coins to help us make this show, we will gladly accept. You can do that at MaximumFun.org/join and become a financially contributing member of the Fanti fam. Our music, as always, is brought to you by Corice, Core.ece, wherever you get Grammy Award-nominated music.
Yes.
Our graphics are by Ashley Nguyen and the folks over at Moonhouse Creative. Our editor is Nihar Patel.
Our senior producer is Laura Swisher. This is a production of Maximum Fun.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned. Audience supported.
Not queer fishing. It's queer baiting. I've never heard the terminology queer fishing.